The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So last week, I talked about confidence and faith. We just began to explore that topic, and I was debating about whether to stick with that topic because the questions around doubt came up, and it seemed like a pretty rich exploration. But I've decided to move on. There's a list in which faith, confidence appears. It's called the five faculties. And the five faculties are faith or confidence, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. And these five can really be seen as the tools that we use to cultivate the ability to be present, the ability to meditate. Tanisaro Bhikkhu sometimes points out that these five tools are skills, actually. They're skills that are useful in cultivating any art. If you want to learn how to play the piano, you need to have some confidence in your ability to do that, confidence in your teacher, confidence in the possibility, which can be seen by witnessing other people doing it. You need to apply some energy, practice. Use mindfulness to notice what you're doing and learn from your mistakes. Concentration begins to build, generally, actually, in many arts and activities where there's a strong focus, concentration begins to build. And then the wisdom piece, you know, in the area of meditation, the wisdom piece is a kind of a life wisdom. In areas of like playing the piano, it's the wisdom about what are the benefits or how do I become more skillful at doing this. So learning the kind of theory, we start from a kind of a theory of how to do something, and then as we practice, it becomes more embedded. And at that point, it becomes kind of realized wisdom. And so this is the way it is in our practice as well. The wisdom that we are cultivating, and that we begin by just having a kind of a book knowledge of, is the wisdom of the Four Noble Truths. That there's suffering, that the cause of suffering is craving, that basically suffering happens to us not imposed from the outside, but we are willing participants in the creation of that suffering through our wanting things to be other than they are. That there is a possibility to be released from suffering through this practice, this path of cultivating qualities of heart and mind that will support our ability to be present. This is the Noble Eightfold Path. So these are the Four Noble Truths. And this is the basic wisdom that we begin with. And the faith initially is a kind of a faith in the possibility, the possibility that we can actually realize this for ourselves, that perhaps we see others who seem to embody this a bit, and we're inspired by that to act ourselves. That confidence of the path of the practice leads to wanting to engage. And that willingness to engage, which is a manifestation of faith, it's a manifestation of confidence. It's kind of the initial seeds of confidence. That willingness to engage leads us directly to this second faculty, the faculty of energy. Now, energy in this context energy itself is kind of a neutral quality. It's energy bodily energy, mental energy can be directed in any direction whatsoever. It can be directed skillfully or unskillfully. So the energy that is a faculty for our waking up, is a faculty for the skill of meditation, the skill of being aware, of being present, that energy is energy directed towards the understanding of the Four Noble Truths. It's energy directed towards the willingness to be present and understand our experience in this framework of what's suffering, what is suffering, how is suffering caused, how is the mind's environment contributing to the suffering that I'm experiencing. So the energy of our of this list is energy directed towards the practice, energy directed towards understanding ourselves experientially, not so much intellectually, but just living the experience, directing our attention towards being mindful and aware of what's happening to us. So energy, a lot of times we have this relationship to energy where we think we have to have energy in order to do something. And actually, especially in this practice, the way in which we engage can actually create energy. So there's a way of making effort. So we usually think that energy, in order to make effort, we need energy. But actually, making effort in a balanced way produces energy. We do need some level of energy in order to make effort. But given that baseline energy of being alive, we have enough there to begin to make this balanced, more balanced kind of effort. So that's mostly what I'd like to talk about today is this process of how do we balance our effort? How do we engage in a way that's not overwrought or just falling asleep? So that kind of, you know, it's a fine line to walk between those two. And that engagement in a way that's not either over-efforting, if we're engaging with our effort with a tightness, with a striving, we are going to exhaust ourselves. And that kind of effort doesn't particularly make energy. It uses up energy. It consumes energy. If we are so relaxed that we're just spacing out, we're not cultivating energy either. So it's a very fine line to learn how to be relaxed and yet attentive at the same time. So there's this one teaching in the suttas. I'm sure many of you are familiar with it. It's there was this one monk who was really determined to become enlightened, and he was doing walking meditation, and his feet got bloody. I mean, I think this is the story as I remember. So his feet got bloody, so he started doing crawling meditation. and the Buddha came to him and said, "You know, when you were a lay person, did you play an instrument?" And he said, "I did. I played the lute." And the Buddha said, "When you played the lute, when the strings were too tight, did it make beautiful music?" And he said, "No, it didn't. The strings broke when the strings were too tight. When the strings were too loose, did it make beautiful music?" He said, "No, it didn't." He said, "In the same way, our practice needs to be this balance of neither too tight nor too loose." So he was letting this monk know he was on the tight end of his practice. He needed to back off, be a little bit more relaxed about his practice. So our culture in particular, we have a very strong kind of striving mentality, our work ethic, you know, is get it done, do it now. And that way of engaging in our lives, I mean, we do this everywhere. It's not just at work. We do it with everything that we do. That way of engaging, of feeling like, okay, I'm going to accomplish something. When we have a task and something in mind that we want to do, we often orient to it as a, I'm going to do this. I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to get it done. And there's that kind of accomplishment mode around doing things. And that often comes into that mode and way that our mind functions, comes into our meditation practice. That we start trying to do the meditation, to accomplish it. And this is kind of, in a way, it's antithetical to the way the practice actually works. There's another analogy that the Buddha used. He often talked about our difficulties in life as being a stream of suffering. You know, that we're kind of in this stream of difficulties. And somebody came to him and said, how did you cross that stream? And he said, by neither tarrying nor hurrying, I crossed the stream. And the person said, what does that mean? What does it mean when you say neither tarrying nor hurrying? And the Buddha said, well, when I tarried, I sank. And when I hurried, I was swept away. So by neither tarrying nor hurrying, I crossed the flood, actually. The analogy was a flood. So to me, I love that image. For me, it's been helpful, particularly on retreat, when I find myself either sinking or getting swept away, to just have that image of not neither tarrying nor hurrying, just meet each moment, meeting each moment. We need to meet each moment fully and completely, and then don't hang on to it or tarry with it. Move on to the next moment, but not try to leap into the next moment. That's getting swept away. That's hurrying. Can I be mindful of the next 10 moments in this moment? We have to just meet this moment, neither tarrying nor hurrying. To me, that's a beautiful analogy. So I'd like to talk a little bit about how this works, both in our sitting meditation and in our daily life. So in our sitting meditation, the usual instruction, or a frequent instruction that we give, is to, and one of the instructions that is where we begin our practice, it's very helpful instruction around bringing attention to the breath, bringing attention to a particular experience. The breath being a really helpful, grounding, centering place where we can learn how to cultivate this attention. So using these skills of confidence, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom, we can learn to turn our attention to one object in our experience. So the usual instructions are, pay attention to the breathing, and when you noticed you've gotten lost, come back and bring your attention back to the breathing. And that way, even that way of framing the instruction can tap into our doing mentality. Okay, I'm supposed to do this practice of paying attention to the breathing. And so we tend to try to force our attention to the breathing. We get very, it's like the way we typically focus and the way our minds think about focusing is to narrow, to do this. And that often creates a kind of a this and nothing else. It creates a kind of a tightness, often, not always. You can actually narrow down and have it be very relaxed and balanced. But often it creates a tension and a tightness. And we think that the point is to stay with the breathing. And so we ignore the fact that it's tense and tight and just stay with the breathing. And we end up wearing ourselves out and getting a headache, getting exhausted, and thinking, what's the point of this? Why do I want to do this? It's boring. The mind keeps going off, and I just have to keep yanking it back, yanking it back. And that yanking quality, too, which is very common with meditation, that quality of waking up in the mind wandering and thinking, oh, I'm supposed to be paying attention to the breathing, and poof, we're kind of violent with our minds in that way. So the usual instructions can lead to approaching the meditation in that way, through that kind of narrowing and restricting, forcing the mind to the breathing, and that yanking quality. Neither one of those are particularly helpful in our meditation or in our lives. So this teaching around balanced effort, and it's one that we have to navigate ourselves. I can only give you some suggestions about ways that I've understood in my own practice how to navigate this. But we each have different minds. Some minds tend to be more goal-oriented and striving and focused. Other minds tend to be more laid back. So we need to know where our own minds are and learn how to navigate what is too relaxed and drifting off and spacing out, and what is too tight. So in terms of the two pieces that I just mentioned, of that tightening down and focusing and the yanking back, I'm going to talk about those two pieces just a little bit, ways to work with this. So part of it comes in the relationship, our attitude around the meditation practice. Do we have this attitude of needing to do, needing to strive, needing to accomplish? Can we relax that attitude? And some ways to support that relaxed attitude are to navigate the meditation through relaxation, particularly if you have a tendency towards over-efforting, if you have a tendency towards striving, then really, really helpful to keep coming back to relaxation. Whenever you notice that the mind is getting tight around whatever it's paying attention to. So to just, and I pointed to this in the guided meditation, that if you noticed in bringing the attention to the breathing that there began to be some tension or tightness, go back to relaxation for a few moments, and then inviting the breathing in again. Navigating the terrain of learning how to pay attention to something in particular in a relaxed way. That is actually the practice. For me, in my own practice, I began to realize that this just clinging on and holding on to the breath wasn't serving very well. And so I began taking a lot of time to settle in to the meditation, not being so anxious to actually get to the breath and stay with it, but to have my practice be around, can the mind be relaxed around being with the breath? So that was the direction that I was headed. And this is bringing in some of the aspects of wisdom. So bringing in the wisdom piece around not over-efforting, not being too tight. So settling in to the meditation, you know, it can take me 20 or 30 minutes before my mind will actually be happily, comfortably staying relaxed with the breath. My mind's pretty slow around this relaxing process. Some people can do this more quickly, but it can take quite a bit of time. And that, and it's just, it's a very compassionate feeling. I mean, the entire process of that settling the mind with the breathing is the meditation. It feels really good, actually. I mean, the mind gets to relax and feels pretty happy and content with this process, as long as it doesn't have the agenda that the point of this is to stay with the breath. The point of this is to be aware and relaxed. And so this whole process of noticing the tension, the relaxation, you know, as I bring my attention to the breathing, you know, noticing, oh, it tightens down, relax. There's mindfulness going through the whole process. And it feels good. It's a nice practice. And by the time the mind finally settles with the breathing in a way that's not grabbing to it, it just sits there. It just hangs there. And again, it's fairly stable and fairly relaxed. So I really recommend, in terms of the sitting meditation, to have this notion or the understanding of what does it mean to be relaxed and attentive? Be the investigation. That's what we're looking at. Not that we're trying to do or notice anything in particular. We can be inclining our mind gently towards the breathing, if we're interested in cultivating concentration. We can use that as our avenue or our intention, the direction to head. But it doesn't have to be, we don't have to hurry to get there. It's neither tarrying nor hurrying. Patience. And the work that we do in the process is very beneficial, not only to our meditation practice, but to our minds in general, to learn this this way of being and navigating that's very relaxed and attentive, simultaneously relaxed and attentive. Now, if you tend to be spaced out, if you tend to be kind of drifting off all the time, you need to the instructions aren't to force yourself to hold on to something so much. But there's another way that we can engage when the mind tends to be spacing out a lot. And it's more about the frequency of reminding ourselves to be present. That effort in a relaxed way is simply a reminder, a reminding. Be aware. Are you aware? What are you aware of? Just very, very simply reminding yourself. Now, in terms of being paying attention to the breath, you might do this with, okay, there's an in-breath coming. You know, if you've got a strong tendency to be spacey, just can you meet an in-breath and be present for that in-breath? If you've got a tendency to be spacey, it's not so helpful to say, okay, I'm going to be here for the next 10 or 15 in-breaths, or the next minute, or the next 40 minutes, whatever. Sometimes we sit down and, okay, I'm going to be present. We try to do it all in the first second. Get that efforting going to be present for the whole sitting right in this first second. It doesn't work. So can you meet one in-breath? That's all you have to do. Just be present for an in-breath. And then, at the end of that in-breath, remind yourself to be present for the out-breath. All you need to do is have enough effort to stay present for the 10 seconds, 2 or 3 seconds, however long your breath is, of that in-breath or that out-breath. That's the level of effort that supports this cultivation of a relaxed and balanced effort. So reminding yourself each breath, and not to try to hold yourself, but it's much more, okay, I'm going to stay present for the in-breath, and then just be there for that breath. And then again, reminding yourself at the interval, keeping reminding yourself. So this frequency of reminding, and the effort here is more about tuning the that reminding to how present you are. Because as we are present, as we stay present, the mind needs less reminding. And then if we are reminding ourselves every half breath, when the mind is actually plenty happy to stay with the breath for three or four breaths in a row, we're agitating the mind by reminding it. And that's too much. So this is a balance. We need to learn our own minds, and this is the practice. We need to learn our own minds. When is our mind either too swept away or lazy or agitated that it needs some reminding? And when is it more able to just stay? I've used this analogy before. I'm sure many of you have heard me use this analogy, but I like this analogy. It's like kind of like being on a scooter. You know, that when we are on a scooter, we have to put our foot down and tap to get the scooter going. And after the scooter builds up some momentum, you don't have to tap as frequently to keep the scooter going so you don't fall. It's kind of like that in the meditation. Initially, in our sitting, when we sit down, we have to remind ourselves a bit to get the momentum going. And then when the momentum is going, and we can begin to have a sense of that, like when you're riding a scooter, you get a sense of when you need to tap because the scooter gets a little wobbly. Similar, you get familiar with your mind. When is it getting a little loose around the attentiveness? When is it too tight? Am I tapping too much? Am I tapping too little? Am I reminding myself too much? Am I reminding myself too little? So these two pieces of using relaxation and having the efforting be just simply about kind of a gentle reminding. And that reminding can take the form of using noting, of in for the in-breath, out for the out-breath, as a gentle kind of pointing to the experience. It can take the form of just simply reminding yourself, be here, or now, or just this. Or am I aware? What am I aware of? Just little thoughts, actually, which support, this is skillful use of thought in meditation, thoughts that support our remembering to be here, remembering to be present. Another way to use thoughts in our practice, another skillful use of thoughts, is along the lines of something else I pointed to in the guided meditation, which is using requests. So in the guided meditation, I suggested requesting the body to relax and not trying to do it, but simply dropping that request into the mind and body and seeing how the mind and body respond. Did any of you notice anything when I suggested that? Was that helpful? You can do this for yourself. You don't need me up here saying that. You can bring that thought up in your own mind. After relaxing as much as you can, may the body relax. Bring that thought up in your mind, and then don't do it, but just notice what happens. So you can do this for yourself. May the mind relax. Requesting both the body and mind to relax. You can also do this for additional things that you might choose to do in your meditation. For instance, having had the mind and body relaxed at a certain point, you might want to open to hearing, or you might want to turn your attention to the breathing. And that turning the attention sometimes can bring in that quality of grabbing onto. And so something I found for myself that's very interesting is to, instead of consciously turning the attention to something, okay, my breath, I'm going to pay attention to it here, trying to, you know, eyes go down, trying to focus there. Rather than doing that, I simply request, may the attention rest with the breathing. I thought of doing that in the guided meditation, but it seemed like I had put enough in there already, so I didn't add that one in there. May the attention rest with the breathing. And then again, sit back and relax. You don't have to do it. You don't have to do the attention resting with the breathing. Drop that request into the mind and body and see what happens. You may find that the breath appears. If you don't, then don't worry about it. Just gently usher your attention towards the breathing as best you can. But often I find that when the mind and body are at a certain level of relaxation, it's very open to this request. It's very open to this kind of gentle intention. It's an intention that we're planting in the mind, actually, this request. It's saying, may the mind move in this direction. So we're planting that intention and then seeing what happens. And often when the mind is in a certain place of relaxation, it's very willing to go there, especially if it's skillful, especially if it's a skillful request. So may the attention rest with the breathing. And then just notice what happens. For me, this has been extremely helpful as a way to... It seems like a more intuitive approach to the meditation. The mind knows how to turn its attention to the breathing in a more skillful way than my conscious mind knows how to do. So I offer that one to you as well as a way to open to this more relaxed kind of mindfulness. Now, I said that I was going to talk about both in sitting and daily life, but I've only talked about part of the sitting aspect, and I've already talked for about 35 minutes, so I'm going to stop here and continue this, not next week because I'm away next week, but I'll continue talking about this theme the following week, moving into other aspects of sitting, because so far I've really only talked about it with respect to focusing on the breathing. And there's many different ways in our sitting practice. I mean, we don't always focus on the breathing. Sometimes we're in a more spacious place. We're listening to sounds, or we're opening to the stream of experience. And there's ways also to be more relaxed and balanced around that. So I'll save some of that for another time and open it now for discussion. As I always find the discussion, particularly in this group, to be rich. So, yeah, and use the mics.
During the guided part of meditation.
Is it on? It's on the side, there's a button.
During the guided part of the meditation, you talked about peripherally,
yes,
letting the awareness come in. Can you talk a little bit more about that? I find if I keep attention to the breath peripherally, then in front of me is all my thoughts.
Uh-huh.
So I'd like to reverse the position of those. Uh-huh. So can you talk a little bit about that peripheral?
Okay, so it's let me give you another way to look at it. We're in the peripheral attention. We are trying to attend to the breathing. So, for example, when I was younger, I was really into stargazing, and I learned that there are certain stars, when they're so faint, you can't look directly at them. You know, when you look directly at them, they disappear. But you have to turn your attention slightly to the side so that you can see it. And so you're looking, you know, your eye is directing that way, but you're actually using the focus out of this, or not focus, it's not really focused, but you're using the ability to see out of the side of your eye. Like right now, I can see this finger over here. You know, even though I'm looking at you, I can be attentive to the fact that this finger is here, and put my attention there, even though it's not focused. So it's that kind of peripheral attention, where you are. It's not that you're trying to, pin it down. It's more allowing it to come in from the sides, but you are attending to it. So it is in the foreground of your awareness and in the periphery of the focus, I guess, if that makes sense. So play with it. And, you know, so you don't have to push the thoughts aside, but it's kind of more of allowing the breathing to feel like it suffuses the entire field through this more peripheral awareness. It kind of can filter in from the sides, sort of. There's another analogy that I like to use around the breathing, and this one may work for some of you better than the peripheral vision one, and that is when we turn our attention to the breathing, often we're like trying to narrow down and not pay attention to anything else. So it's like we try to restrict. It's like, okay, I'm going to pay attention to the breathing. And so what our minds do is it says, just notice this area. And it's like our whole attention constricts to just down to this area. And something I found helpful for myself is to, rather than thinking of the attention constricting down to this area, is to allow that feeling in that area to get as big as the attention, so that it's kind of like there's not we don't have to push aside all the other things that are going on. There can still be the hearing, still be thoughts coming in and out, but allow the breathing to get as big as it can in your awareness. Instead of trying to go down, you know, it's kind of like if you're looking at something and you want to see it more closely, you know, sometimes we think about moving into it. But sometimes we can think about having that thing move to us and get really large. You know, you can, you know, when you zoom in on the computer, you know, often we think about it as being a tightening, and yet the thing gets big that we're looking at. We want to allow us to see something that's small. We allow it to get big when we zoom in on the computer. So a similar kind of movement of allowing the thing that we're attending to get really large. And for me, it helps to really settle back. It's kind of like almost being in the back seat. It feels like being back here somewhere. And rather than being up here trying to drive and direct, it's like back in the back and letting the experience come in. So thank you for that. Yeah, Victor.
I noticed with the instruction to attend to the object peripherally, it really, my tendency is to narrow down. And by narrowing down, there's a natural constriction that happens, at least within me. And that solved it amazingly. And after dinner, I was going, God, that's such a duh thing. It's like, oh, why didn't I think of that before? Because I'm just constantly trying to hit the nail with the wrong tool.
And we have to remind ourselves over and over and over and over again. I mean, even now, having it, you'll forget.
To me, it's like a new toy. I want to go home and play with it.
Oh,
it's
good.
Like, it's like, oh, my God. It's a new tool in the chest.
That's really it. I found that to be really an interesting one to play with, that the peripheral vision. And to me, it feels very much like, yeah, it really feels like the breathing is just kind of in the whole field. It's not so tight or restricted. And this is a different way of paying attention to the breathing. Some teachers teach narrowing down to like the nostrils. The teaching that I've been doing with mindfulness of breathing has been taught by Thanissaro Bhikkhu, and he teaches what he calls full body breathing. And, you know, first I think of it as full awareness breathing rather than trying to feel it throughout the whole body, expanding it so that wherever I'm feeling, you know, like breathing here, that just takes up you know, the field of my attention, so that it's just flowing through the whole field of the attention. And, you know, it just staying with that, just staying with that. So that the attention can be very broad, and the breath can fill that attention. And then I tend to move so that then I try to expand the place, the bodily experience that I'm paying attention to, so that it's broader and broader, so that the breath begins to feel like it's more throughout the whole body. Yeah, Victor.
So as you broaden your attention on the body, and you are, what I've done in the past, and I'm just wondering from your experience, you have so much more, broadening the attention, noting pleasant and unpleasant, but instead of the pleasant and pleasant of a narrowed space, it's the pleasant and unpleasant of a larger
of a broader area.
Broader area.
Yeah. So here's another exercise for you to play with. I mean, sometimes we have this notion of, you know, only being able to see things. You know, we have this idea that our attention can pick up a certain size of area. And, you know, so in your hand, you know, just put your hand up and, you know, can you pay attention to the feeling in your thumb right now? Can you notice? You can move it a little bit so that you feel it, or even hold on to it. You know, really get the sensation strong there. And you can narrow your attention down to the area of the thumb. And now, see if you can expand, let go of your thumb if you're holding on to it. Can you pay attention to the palm of your hand and feel the palm of your hand? Most people can do that. You know, you can, it's like the size of the hand is relatively easy to see as a kind of a feeling. You can, as a whole, as just the entity, you know, the kind of pulsing or vibratory quality, the energetic quality there. And we can also narrow down to the thumb. That ability of the mind to go from the smaller to the larger can go larger. And that takes practice, it seems, you know, that it's not as natural to them. Then if I say, okay, now put your attention in your whole body, allow your attention to take in your whole body at once, that's harder to do. But we can slowly begin to expand, and I do this actually as an exercise sometimes. Maybe I'll do it next week, where, you know, starting with place in the head, you know, can you take in the experience of the head and then expand to include your neck, expand to include your shoulders, just gradually encouraging the mind to take in more and more as kind of a whole. And it's kind of the same way that, you know, with the breathing through the body, it's like an experience, it's one experience, it's not a bunch of little ones, it feels like a kind of a whole.
Can you expound on the, I don't want to say benefits, but the outcomes of a broader whole body versus the, let's say, minute?
Well, I think it's about the mind's. This is more about individuals. So when this mind, my mind, tried to do the narrowing, the more constricted, it produced so much tension that it was not a skillful approach. The opening to a broader awareness of the breathing is much more of a way that this mind can be relaxed and focused at the same time. Some minds can be relaxed and focused in a very narrow area. Is there anybody else want to ask a question? Yeah, let's. Do you have a quick one or
just a quick observation? I notice when I am relaxed and settled, my attention can go very, very, very narrow with the relaxation.
Yes,
but it's not achievable immediately. I can't go, okay, narrow it.
Yes.
It's a long process.
That's the way it is for this mind as well, that once the mind has learned how to be settled and relaxed with this broader awareness, then it's more malleable. It can choose, okay, more focused. Some people can go right away to that narrowing.
I realized that through my body movement and dancing and exercise that I learned to move and, you know, breathe into relaxing. And then also, as I've had surgeries, I noticed that I use my breathing to heal those areas that need mm-hmm. healing by consciously being aware of the oxygen going to those areas.
And
it's been very, very beneficial.
That?
Yes, so, I've always been very aware of that because I've always been into body movement and exercising and dancing. And I noticed that as I breathe into it, it just naturally relaxes. And so
yeah.
I feel fortunate that I'm able to do that.
So right now, just for all of you, now that you've mentioned like feet, feet's an interesting one. Put your attention in your feet. And imagine, it takes a little imagination, but imagine on the in-breath that energy is coming in through the soles of your feet. And just see if there's any experience of a slight change in in-breath and out-breath in the area of your feet. Anybody? Yeah. Use the mic. Oh,
I got one word. Warmer.
Your feet felt warmer?
The bottom of your feet felt warmer.
Okay. So that's just what you noticed. That's great. Sometimes that can be just the attention. You know? Yeah. Bud.
Well, in a practice that doesn't give you an option like that.
Is it on? Okay, Victor turned it on.
Yeah. So in a practice like Zen that doesn't give you an option, but that you breathe in through a particular spot, the hara, does that correspond to a chakra? Or
I don't know much about chakras.
Okay. Well, I don't either. That's why I'm asking. But there must be some reason that Zen practice selects this particular point.
No, I think part of the reason, I mean, the you can feel the movement there. I mean, even putting your hand, I think, you know, I think they, 2 inches. Any 2 inches above or below the navel?
Below
the navel. Yeah, you can feel a movement there. It's a place where the breathing does respond. I have a more sense of it up here. So, you know, I just use what's most obvious. You know, and even actually a couple inches above the navel is a stronger place for me. I don't know why Zen picks that place. I mean, it might have something to do with chakras, but I don't know.
just intellectually curious. Thank you.
Yeah. Could you pass the mic over?
I was curious when you said that sometimes it took you like almost 30 minutes to narrow the concentration to the breath. And my personal preference is for shorter sittings, so when you said that, I thought, oh, is that why everybody wants to sit for these long sittings? I don't know, there's something about, my mind tends to get agitated towards when I sit for a long time, like after 20 minutes. It's agitated initially, but then it seems to settle. But then it seems to get agitated more after a certain point.
Well, all I would suggest is that you use the practice of noticing whether there's tension in the way that you're trying to settle the mind down. Because we can settle the mind, sort of. You know, what you're describing, I'm not sure what's happening. We need to talk a little more detail, but what you're describing is, you know, kind of a way that we can work is like, okay, I'm going to just settle down. I'm going to pay attention to the breathing with that kind of more narrowed focus. And that uses energy often. So it uses up the energy as opposed to being the kind of effort that creates energy. And so after a period of time, the energy is going to be gone and the mind is going to be more agitated. So if you just use the kind of moving in a way that's relaxed, not trying to force the mind to stay still. I mean, the agitated mind can be uncomfortable, but just, you know, directing it in this way, I think you'll find that over time the it's beneficial even for 20 minutes to do this. It's beneficial. So, you know, it's just that you might notice if you kind of shift the way you're paying attention to this more relaxed style, that it's possible that after a while that the agitation will not come back so quickly. So what were you going to say?
I think it's, today I'm agitated, just period, but I think normally it's somewhat relaxed, and a lot of the agitation is in response to body discomforts.
I see,
And wanting to move, and then I start thinking about all the different teachers' opinions about moving.
So you begin, does the body get more uncomfortable as you sit then? Is that what's happening?
After a certain point, yeah.
Just let yourself move and move consciously. Just do it.
Okay. Thank you.
But do it mindfully. Allow it to be part of the meditation. Yeah. Yeah. And this should be the last one.
Good morning.
Good morning.
These are the five what's, and would you repeat them again?
Sure. So these are the five faculties. And they are faith or confidence, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. And so last week I talked about confidence. This week I talked a little bit about the energy side, and I think I'll continue the energy discussion a little bit. And there'll be somebody else here talking. I think she's going to talk about mindfulness next week. But Chris Clifford, she's not been here for a while because she's been away. But
thank you.
Okay, so I'll see you in a couple of weeks.